The following content is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Tech Tips. Coming up on this month's episode of Tech Tips, a refreshed look at the Victor Reader Stream and a review of the QBraille 40-cell XL. That's what's coming up on this month's episode of Tech Tips. The Victor Reader Stream, a product worth considering or reconsidering. This article comes to us courtesy of Access World Magazine, and it is written by Jamie Pauls. I am someone who has enjoyed using technology for as long as I can remember. I wasn't as adventurous as some blind people I know. I never set up a home radio station in my bedroom, but I did play with cassette recorders, mixing my voice and music together. I'm sure the result would make me cringe today, so I'm glad I don't have any existing tapes lying around to embarrass me at some point. When Humanware introduced the Victor Reader Stream back in 2007, I remember being enamored with this cool little device. It supported many different types of text-based and audio content, was fairly portable, and was very easy to operate. When the new generation Victor Reader Stream came out a few years later, I purchased one, even though my original Stream hadn't missed a beat in all the years I used it. The second generation of the Stream allowed me to download content directly from the internet and easily read magazines, including Access World. Even as the iPhone took over the world, I still had a soft spot in my heart for the Stream. I couldn't help noticing, however, that my old friend from Humanware stayed in the desk drawer of my office more and more. Bard, Audible, VoiceStream Reader, and any number of music streaming apps made it possible for me to go through my day without even needing to use any device other than my phone. The day came when work slowed down for me, and I found myself needing a bit of extra cash. So I started looking through my home office to figure out what I no longer needed. I had foolishly neglected to take the battery out of my first generation Stream when I stopped using it, and I also did not remove it from its executive products case. It eventually stopped working, and presumably, oil from the leather case created a sticky residue on the unit. Fortunately, my second generation device was in good working order. I advertised it on a list and got a fair price for it. I was a bit nostalgic when it left my hands for the last time, but I figured since I was now firmly in the Apple ecosystem, I didn't need it anymore. I didn't give much thought to my dearly departed friend for many months, though I did notice that my iPhone's battery took a serious hit from all the tasks I threw at it. Also, breaking news alerts, text messages, and phone calls, yes, the iPhone really does make phone calls, kept pulling me away from what I was reading or listening to. I could listen to an audiobook with my phone locked and stashed in my pocket, but found myself constantly pulling the phone from my pocket, unlocking it, stopping the audiobook I was reading, attending to the task at hand, restarting the book, locking the phone, and placing it back in my pocket again, only to be notified of a supposedly urgent breaking news event that caused me to go through the process all over again. In addition to the annoyance of constantly needing to juggle my phone and making sure it was always charged sufficiently, there were times when I wanted to listen to a piece of audio that I didn't intend to keep around for long. I might also want to set multiple bookmarks in the audio and quickly move between marks while taking notes on what I was hearing. This was certainly possible on my phone, but I noticed that I was beginning to wish for my Stream again. If I had a stream, I could let my phone recharge and use a device dedicated to reading and listening to audio as I desired. The 15 hours of battery life on my stream meant that I could recharge at my convenience rather than at inopportune times. I missed being able to pop an SD card into the computer, load random content on it, and hit the road, rather than syncing the content through a service such as Dropbox, only to discover that the content wasn't always on my phone when I expected it to be. Finally, I missed the feel of physical buttons under my fingers when I was quickly moving through books, music, and other content on my stream. I consider myself a proficient iPhone user and don't mind navigating using a smooth surface, but I still find physical controls on a device to be more efficient at times. Eventually, I decided to purchase another new generation Victor Reader Stream. I have placed several tutorials on my new stream, including archives of some old Cavi classes on using Reaper, the audio editing software I use on a daily basis. Each MP3 file is quite long, and VoiceDream Reader actually had difficulty loading some of these files. The stream doesn't even break a sweat. I still use the Audible app on my phone, and I use Bard on both my phone and the stream. Bookshare content tends to live on my stream these days. I enjoy NFB Newsline on my stream and generally read the latest issue of Access World that way. Using the stream, I can choose to read Access World directly from the internet or move the latest issue to my SD card for offline reading. One downside to owning a Victor Reader Stream is the price. Depending on where you purchase one, you will pay somewhere in the neighborhood of $350 for the unit. The stream does a lot, and it is specialized for people who are blind, but the price will definitely give many pause. It may be especially hard for someone to justify the cost of the stream if they, like me, already own a smartphone that admittedly can do everything the stream can. Totally coincidental to this article, a recent episode of the Double Tap Canada podcast took up this debate in a lively discussion. There are those in the blind community who see no reason to even consider adding a device like the stream to their technology arsenal, while others, like myself, still make a case for keeping it around. One thing that may ease the sticker shock a bit is the fact that there are many people who are looking to sell both the original and the new generation Victor Reader Stream in good working order for a reasonable price. If you aren't interested in using a stream in conjunction with the internet, the first generation unit may be sufficient for your needs. There will almost certainly be a lot of passionate opinions on this topic. Some readers will find almost every point I have made to be totally opposite to their own views. Others will feel totally vindicated by my words. Here is some product information and purchasing options for you in case you're interested. This is for the new generation Victor Reader Stream put out by Humanware. The cost of this unit is $395, and that is direct from Humanware. If you are interested in contacting them directly, Humanware's telephone number is 1-800-722-3393. Humanware is based in Canada, but has distributors all over the world. Dealers may sell the stream at a lower price than what is shown on Humanware's website. Also, check out Humanware's YouTube channel for training videos on all the products they sell, including the Braille Note Touch Plus and several popular Braille displays. Listening to Tech Tips on the North Carolina Reading Service. Now, here's a review of the QBraille XL from HIMSS Incorporated, a Braille display with elements of a QWERTY keyboard. Comes to us from Access World Magazine, and it is written by Scott DeVert. In a recent issue of Access World, I reviewed the Mantis Q, the result of a collaboration between APH and Humanware. I pointed out that one of the Mantis Q's major highlights is the minimal learning curve for users. A built-in QWERTY keyboard means no longer needing to learn and use a set of Braille-specific commands to emulate certain operating system or screen reader keystrokes. Turns out, there's another company with similar visions of consumers spending less hands-on time with their command reference manuals. The QBraille XL is the latest 40-cell offering from HEMS, featuring a traditional Birkin-style keyboard, a full-function row, modifier keys, and almost anything else not covering a text entry. Onboard applications include a notepad, daisy reader, alarm clock, calculator, and calendar. It supports 6 simultaneous Bluetooth connections and 1 USB connection. Orienting the QBraille with the Braille display closest to you, the layout is as follows. Along the right side, the USB-C port is closest to you. Behind this, you will find an SD card slot. The QBraille XL supports SDHC cards of up to 32 gigs. Along the back is the recessed hard reset button that must be activated by using a paperclip or other small object. The left side of the unit has the power, sleep, wake button. Pressing it for a few seconds will either wake the QBraille up or put it to sleep. Pressing it for 5 seconds will either shut it down or boot it up. On the top surface and closest to you are the Braille cells with their corresponding cursor routing buttons. At each end of the display are 2 buttons for scrolling. Behind the display, you will find the lower row of keys. However, the various keys on the QBraille XL are not in nice rows as a general rule. As such, we will first explore the keys on the far left surface. Closest to you is the mode button, which allows you to toggle hybrid mode. Above that is the pairing key, and above that is escape. To the right of the pairing key is a column with 4 keys. From top to bottom, they are Shift, Caps Lock, Tab, and F1. To the right of F1 are the rest of the function keys. Every 4th function key has a tactile marking with space between every group of 4. To the right of the F12 key is a traditional 6-pack of keys arranged in a 3x2 grid. The left column from top to bottom is Insert, Home, and End. The right column is Delete, Page Up, and Page Down. Underneath the N key are the directional arrows in their logical positions. The very bottom row is Control, Function, Windows, Alt, Space, Alt, Applications, and Control. That's the Microsoft layout. For the Apple layout, the order is Function, Control, Option, Command, Space, Command, Option, and Control. Above this row are the remaining 8 keys of the standard Perkins keyboard. The package you receive will include the QBraille XL, a 2GB SD card, a USB cable, power adapter, the first 2 chapters of the manual in Braille, and a protective carrying case with shoulder strap. The case has a solid build with access to all ports and buttons, allowing the device to be used on the go when opened. The cover is secured by a magnetic closure. After turning on the QBraille for the first time, you may wish to configure how it functions. When booting the device, you will be placed in the main menu, with the first option being the notepad. To jump directly to options, press O. Within the options menu, you can set up options for the type of Braille for keyboard entry, reading, and your Braille table. 10 languages are supported, along with the US, UK, and UEB. You can also choose how the QBraille behaves upon startup, specifying if you wish to have it start at the main menu, with a newly opened document in Notepad, in Terminal mode, or in the calculator. Finally, there are options for Bluetooth, System Message Display Time, Power Saving mode, One-Handed mode, Keyboard Layout, Mass Storage mode, and a few others. Many of these functions are self-explanatory, and the manual is very thorough concerning these features. For users of the Braille Edge, another HEMS product, many functions will be very familiar. The notepad is where you will be able to browse files located on the SD card. You can also copy or paste files to other folders and view information about the file. If you have the option to view file information turned on in the Options menu, the particulars are available for each file automatically. Unlike the Scratchpad feature on the Focus series of displays, the QBraille will also display keyboard shortcuts for the Notepad and any other application if this option is turned on. The keyboard command structure resembles that of Windows. To open a file, press Ctrl plus O on the Perkins-style keyboard. Ctrl plus N will create a new document. This is also the case with several editing commands, such as copy, cut, paste, find, selecting text, and many more. There are also Perkins-style keyboard commands, and the ability to mark blocks of text on which you can then carry out any number of editing actions. Pressing spacebar plus M or the Alt key will take you into the Notepad's menu. Windows users will feel right at home as the menu structure closely resembles that of other typical text editors. The QBraille supports the reading of BRF, BRL, TXT, RTF, DOCX, and PDF files. It supports the saving and editing of TXT and BRL files. If you open any of the other formats mentioned and edit it, the file will be saved as a TXT file. I loaded a text file that was 212.3 kilobytes, which is the size of a small book, and it accurately displayed in contracted Braille. The load time was around 30 seconds. Smaller files, such as the text of another article I'm working on that were about 9 kilobytes in size, loaded in less than 5 seconds. Editing documents in text format is also a pleasant experience, as you can edit the newly translated document in contracted Braille and then press Ctrl plus S to save your changes. The translation and saving process took about 10 seconds when I made modifications to the 212 kilobyte TXT file. With the aforementioned article, saving back to TXT took about 3 seconds. I opened a 309 kilobyte RTF document and it took about 45 seconds to load. Note that very large text files can be read on the QBraille, but they will take significantly longer. I loaded a 3.45 megabyte TXT file and it took approximately 2 minutes and 15 seconds. DOCX files also take similar amounts of time to load and save. Regardless of size, BRF and BRL files seem to load nearly instantaneously. The opening of PDF files takes considerably longer. I opened a document that was 129 pages and it took the QBraille nearly 2 minutes to load. A 12-page PDF opened in 30 seconds. Note that even if the PDF document has structural elements such as headings, the QBraille will not carry those over when the PDF files are opened. Reading without the option of modifying the open file is also done through the Notepad. Use Ctrl plus R to open the currently selected file in read-only mode. This mode also provides a bookmarking feature. If you close the file you have been reading, the QBraille will remember your position. In addition to all the formats I've covered for reading material, the QBraille comes with a DAISY reader. This reader supports text-only DAISY files and does not support DAISY audio content. If you download a DAISY text-only book from Bookshare, extracting all the files to the same folder allows you to read on the QBraille. The QBraille supports the robust navigability offered by DAISY, which makes jumping through a book much more convenient if proper markup is used in the file. Two of my favorite ways to jump through a DAISY book are by either heading or paragraph. While not necessarily useful when reading a novel, this method can make a hierarchical navigation of an encyclopedia or textbook much easier. If each article or chapter is divided by heading level, I can quickly jump from heading to heading or, in some cases, be even more granular. This is also true of content from the NFB Newsline. While direct downloading is not possible from the QBraille, the advantage to using it is that you have shortcut keys that allow you to quickly jump among the available elements and then to jump from, say, paragraph to paragraph. While you can accomplish this through the menu system like you can on the Mantis, doing so is not necessary with the Cue Braille. Options are also available in the Daisy Reader to add and delete bookmarks, find text, and go to a specific page. Load times for the books were similar to the text-only versions of the content. The Cue Braille has a small set of applications that offer additional features, including a calculator, alarm clock, stopwatch, timer, and a calendar. Details can be found in the manual. The Cue Braille is capable of connecting 6 Bluetooth devices and 1 USB connection to a computer. Unlike the Mantis, keyboard shortcuts are available to quickly jump among the connected devices. The following evaluation was done using the firmware version 2.4 of the Cue Braille. The Cue Braille supports many screen readers on Windows and supports earlier versions of iOS. For a complete list of the screen readers supported, please consult the manual. I do not have access to every screen reader the Cue Braille supports, but I have used my available resources to test as many options as I could. For Windows PCs. Before configuring the Cue Braille on any Windows device, you will need to first install the USB driver. After the driver has been successfully installed, you should be able to use your screen reader with the Cue Braille. Using JAWS 2020 over a USB connection, I was able to type in contracted Braille without issues. For output, I needed to set it up with JAWS after the driver installation. Using the standard installation process for JAWS, I did not encounter any challenges during the setup. With some limitations, the Cue Braille functions as advertised. Most keyboard connections function as if connected to a standard QWERTY keyboard. One exception is that if you have 3 windows open and wish to switch to the one most in the background, this does not work. Pressing Alt plus Tab will allow you to switch to the window behind the one you are currently in, but pressing Alt plus Tab again will take you back to the window from which you came. It doesn't matter how quickly you press the key combination, it's not possible to reach that third window. There are less productive ways to get to that third window, such as pressing Insert F10 to pull up a list of available windows, but Alt plus Tab, when it functions correctly, is much more effective. Bluetooth connectivity worked with some further limitations. While I can pan around the text and edit it using the cursor routing buttons when on USB, this functionality does not work over Bluetooth. I tried with 2 different PCs with the same result. If I were someone who didn't mind being tethered to my computer with a USB cable, this would not be such a concern. However, if you plan to use Bluetooth with JAWS and the Cue Braille for editing, you can use your arrow keys, but all of those efforts to maneuver the cursor represent a serious efficiency hit. HIMS has indicated that they are aware of this bug and that they will be issuing an update when it has been resolved. NVDA. I used NVDA 2020.2 for this section. Though there is a delay between what I write and when it appears on the Braille display, none of the input gets lost over either Bluetooth or USB. With contracted Braille, there are still some random translation issues when editing, but it otherwise functions well. Just like with JAWS, the Alt plus Tab combination does not allow the user to move to a third or fourth window. Unlike JAWS, I did not experience issues panning the Braille display or using the cursor routing buttons while connected through Bluetooth. Now, onto VoiceOver using iOS. I used iOS 13.7 on an iPhone SE 2020 to evaluate the Cue Braille. If you wish to use the Cue Braille like a conventional display, you will still go to Settings, Accessibility, VoiceOver, Braille, and pair the Cue Braille like any other device. If you wish to take advantage of the hybrid mode, you will also need to pair the Cue Braille through Settings, Bluetooth. This is so the other keys on the display function as they should. While in hybrid mode, I found that when setting my VoiceOver modifier key to Caps Lock, none of the VoiceOver specific commands worked. Setting the VoiceOver modifier keys to Control and Option solved this issue. Hybrid mode is particularly helpful for keyboard commands that are not VoiceOver specific. If you wish to send an email, you can use Command plus Shift plus D. If you wish to execute the same command with the Perkins keyboard, you will have to quickly press a sequence of three different key combinations. Inevitably, and regardless of the display in use, contracted Braille input will occasionally introduce additional keys or a complexity to the seemingly routine tasks. For example, I observed that single letter quick nav commands for web documents did not work when using hybrid mode with the entry grade set to US contracted. The alternative is mapping my own commands or performing the equivalent Braille specific commands outside of hybrid mode. Setting the Braille entry grade to computer Braille eliminates this issue altogether. Moving on to Mac. A MacBook Air 2020 running Mac iOS 10.15.6 was used to conduct this evaluation. As with iOS, I found that using Caps Lock as a voiceover modifier key presented some challenges. Commands that include Shift do not reliably work. This behavior is only somewhat improved when using the device over USB. However, the Mac responded well when Control and Option were used over both protocols. Writing contracted Braille using the hybrid mode presented a delay of a few seconds, but as with NVDA, no characters were missed even when typing rapidly. Operating in the standard, non-hybrid mode, all conventional Braille display commands appear to work as expected. Just like iOS, you must change the entry grade on the display to computer Braille for the single letter quick nav commands to work. In conclusion, with a few fixes, I feel the QBraille could be a great contender for the more advanced screen reader user. HIMSS has gone to great lengths to design a product that bridges the gap between paradigms, each with an abundance of idiosyncrasies. However, having to move in slower ways when I have more than two windows open gives me pause to consider the trade-off. Further, as I am a Windows user who requires the use of JAWS for essential job duties, I would want to utilize the Bluetooth connectivity to its fullest advantage. The battery life of the QBraille seems to be between 16 to 18 hours, which is quite impressive. The Braille has a bit of a spongy feel to it, but is very sharp. I also appreciate the fact that HIMSS continues to design their products with options for those who only have the use of one hand. With a few fixes, I feel this device would suit the needs of customers like myself and many other more advanced users. At present, I am choosing to remain cautiously optimistic that the issues mentioned above will be solved to offer even a more seamless experience. Okay, moving on to product information. This was for the QBraille 40XL. It's manufactured by HIMSS, and the cost is $1,195. We've run out of time for today's episode of Tech Tips. Be sure to tune in next month. I'm Chris Skidmore, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Tech Tips is readily available as a podcast after this broadcast by visiting our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And as always, thank you for listening to Tech Tips.